diagnosis as well, because you certainly need, you know, your daughter needs you and you need her. But thank you for sharing that story. Absolutely amazing story. Karen in Carlisle, well done there. Denise in Anglesey and Joe in Watford, I'll come to you straight after the 3 o'clock news. 0808 590 9693. Every call tells a story, and you heard what I mean.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
BBC News at 3 o'clock. This is Justine Green. Sir Keir Starmer has added his voice to international calls for Israel and the Lebanese militant group Hezbollah to agree a ceasefire. In his first address as Prime Minister to the UN General Assembly, Sir Keir said it was vital for both sides to step back from the brink. The Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu addresses the Assembly later today, but has already rejected a proposal for a truce from France and the US. President Zelensky has outlined his plans for victory against Russia in a meeting with Joe Biden at the White House. Mr. Biden said Russia wouldn't prevail and pledged more military aid. The Ukrainian leader then met the US vice president and Democratic presidential nominee Kamala Harris. She insisted it was vital to stand up to the Russian leader.
Putin's aggression is not only an attack on the people of Ukraine. It is also an attack on fundamental principles such as sovereignty and territorial integrity. History has shown us if we allow aggressors like Putin to take land with impunity, they keep going.
The Treasury is reconsidering Labour's manifesto plan to further tighten rules on non-dom tax status, which were scrapped by the last Conservative government. BBC News understands there are concerns about how much money would be raised if wealthy foreigners left the UK. The First Minister of Northern Ireland, Michelle O'Neill, the first Irish nationalist to take on the role, will give her speech at the Sinn Féin conference this evening. The party is holding its annual gathering in the Irish Republic. Our Ireland correspondent Chris Page reports.
Sinn Féin is going into its conference after a historic third election success in Northern Ireland. It won the most seats in the devolved assembly in 2022 and became the largest party in councils a year later. Then, 3 months ago, it secured more Westminster seats than any other local party. Tonight will mark another significant moment. Michelle O'Neill will address the annual gathering, known as the Ardèche, for the first time as Stormont First Minister. She's likely to call for Westminster to give more funding to the devolved administration and to set out terms for a potential referendum on Irish unity.
Football: Tottenham Hotspur have begun their Europa League campaign with a 3-0 win at home against the Azerbaijani side Karabag through the Spurs defender Radu Dragusin, who was sent off. His manager Ange Postecoglou praised his players for sticking to their guns despite the red card.
When you go down a 10-minute, invariably at times you can't be as aggressive or keep the ball as much or play as fluently, but for the most part I thought the intent was there. That's the kind of team we want to be, and you know, whatever challenge we have before us is to tackle it that way.
And Hurricane Helene has been upgraded to Category 4. It's gathering pace off the Gulf of Mexico, heading towards Florida. And that's the BBC News. It's 3 minutes past three.
Football on BBC Radio 5 Live.
Listen to exclusive live commentaries from the Premier League, Champions League and more with the 5 Live sport team.
He's been on the pitch for 10 seconds. Thank you very much.
Top of everything football every day with the Football Daily Podcast.
This is the best central defensive partnership in European football.
His confidence levels are through the roof.
Football on 5 Live.
Listen on BBC Sound. This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
The voice of the UK.
Dotun Adebayo. Listen on BBC Sound.
What a story of courage from your lovely listener and her brilliant daughter, says Chris in Devon. Bless them both. So glad things have gone well for Karen's daughter, says Anne in Carlisle. Good luck to both of them. And I'm sure many of you as well would echo those sentiments about our last caller, Karen in Carlisle, and her amazing story and the story of her daughter as well. And thank you all for sending her your good wishes. I'm sure she appreciates it. And let's hope she joins us many times because, you know, she certainly has got us all inspired and she tells an amazing story, as you could hear. So what we've been talking about tonight on the nightclub, amongst other things, is the COVID inquiry, We've heard the chief medical officer, Sir Chris Whitty, giving evidence and, for the first time, saying that he sometimes worries that the government may have overstated the danger of COVID to the public in the early days of the pandemic, or whether they understated it, or whether they got it right. We've been asking whether you agree or not. Irvin in West Cornwall shared his thoughts.
Well, I think it's one of those things. I don't think it's handled right in the first place. Anyway, it happened. And I think really at the time they should have shut down any flights coming from that part of the world into Europe and the United States and Australasia, but they didn't. And it got out.
Indeed, and many of you have been sharing that your thoughts with me with regards to the pandemic by text on 85058 and email dotun@bbc.co.uk. I'll read out some of those in a moment, because one of the other subjects we've been talking about today has been inspired, if you like, prompted by the tragic story of the death of a mum of five. She's thought to have had a non-surgical cosmetic procedure. It's thought to be the first case of its kind in the UK. And two people have been arrested on suspicion of manslaughter. It's a very sad case, don't need to say that. And one that raises the subject of cosmetic treatments. Generally, anecdotally, more and more people seem to be having cosmetic procedures of one form or another. Sometimes it's just to re-establish a hairline, for example, or to whiten your teeth or brighten your teeth. Whatever the procedure might be, if you or somebody you know has undergone cosmetic surgery, do you mind sharing that process with us and all the ramifications of that, how people react to you once you've had it, and also what prompted you to opt for cosmetic surgery? 08085 909693. If you could share a story with us, we'd be very grateful. Karen in Carlisle, as I was saying, we were speaking to her just before the 3 o'clock news. She shared the story of her now 26-year-old daughter who had to have life-saving surgery when she was born due to her head being deformed. And that was the result of a particular condition, rare condition. She had her face regenerated, if you like, or reconstructed twice. And at the time, Karen was told her daughter wouldn't make it past the age of six.
It was quite a journey for both of us.
Of course, yeah.
She's so brave and so strong and so amazing. And the poor child had to live with three different faces. The one she was born with up until the surgery. Then she changed after the next surgery. And then she changed again after the second surgery. How'd you cope with that? But she did, she has. And she's absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, how do you cope with that, particularly as a young child? But you do, don't you? You do. That's what the amazing thing is. If a young child copes with that, then, you know, I'm not saying that everybody's situation isn't specific to them, but when a young child copes with that, is there anything we can't cope with? Do you know what I mean in that respect? 08085 909693. Do you know what? Sometimes the nightclub inspires me as well. And the story from Karen, and many of your stories generally, inspires me to do better, for want of a better way of describing it. Just do better. You know, Dawson, you can do better. Do better, if you can. Denise is in Anglesey. Joe is in Watford. Bear with me, Denise. Hello, Joe. Good morning. How are you?
Okay, thank you. Talking about clubs now, does this club, your club, Dotton, does it actually have a name?
Well, it's like, our club. It's our club. And
could
it's...
I make a suggestion?
Yeah, please do.
Can you hear me, actually?
Yeah. I can hear you loud and clear. Can you hear me?
Could I make a suggestion for...
Of course you can. Of course you can.
For our club.
Yes, please do.
Right. It is Dutton's diverse debate basement.
Love it. I love it. DDDB.
Yes, and it's a very democratic club. You can wear anything you like, but you must wear something.
Oh, yes. Oh, for goodness sake, please wear something. Yes, I agree with you.
You can wear anything you like. And I suggest the first-time caller tune would be John Coltrane's Shifting Down.
Oh, my goodness. John Coltrane died in vain of a love supreme. You do know that, don't you?
Yes, I know that one, but Shifting Down is a bit more cool, you know.
Yeah.
It's cool.
Yeah, Giant Steps was pretty cool. And I named my band after it, actually, once upon a time. But, yeah, John Coltrane died in vain of a love supreme. Why has it got to be basement? Why not penthouse?
Well, because it's got a nice debate. 60s, 1960s feel to it. Can you remember there used to be those basement clubs in the 60s?
Oh, yeah. Oh, the Shebeens. Oh, I remember those. Oh, yes. Well, I went in the 60s. I wasn't invited, but, yeah, I do know.
Oh, no, that's right. I never actually was in one, I don't think, but...
I used to work at a place.
See them a lot in films.
I used to work on a newspaper in Brixton in South London. Can you believe on the estate across the road, they used to have a Shebeen in the daytime. I'd go there for lunchtime, you know, just to go to the Shebeen. That's mad. Okay, yeah, let's see how many other people think we should have.
Oh, one other thing, you could, everyone can make a suggestion, and it could be changed from time to time so that everybody could have a turn.
Why not just call it the nightclub? I mean, you know.
Well, Do you
know what I mean? It's not a bad name, and it sort of sums up what it is. Once you say it's Dotton, so then it becomes about me, and my ego is already so big that I have to park my comb in the garage.
You started it, Dotton. You started it.
Well, I didn't actually. We started it because.
Oh.
I'll tell you the funny. If I might just share very quickly the history of these overnight programs. So, I was a host of a program called Up All Night, and it was what we called a global magazine program. At same hours, 1 o'clock till 5 o'clock in the morning, but we would go round the world very cleverly. And it wasn't me that came up with this creation. Very cleverly, we would go from west to east because we'd follow the clock. So when we started at 1 o'clock, we'd be doing stories, real news stories from, let's say, the west coast of the United States in California, where it would only be, because they're 8 hours behind, it would only be like 5 o'clock in the afternoon when we came on air. So there'd still be stories happening then. And over the course of the night, from 1 o'clock till 5 o'clock, we would move across the globe from west to east. So usually by 4:30 in the morning, we were speaking to people in Japan, in Australia, in New Zealand, because there it would be 2 o'clock in the afternoon or 1 o'clock in the afternoon or whatever the time might be. So it was a very cleverly constructed program.
Oh, yeah. Very clever.
And we intended to carry on like that. Then the pandemic came, and for all sorts of reasons, people wanted to talk. That's what happened. People wanted to talk. Yeah. This was organic. It wasn't that we devised it. People wanted to talk. So many people were lonely. And
Yeah,
socially distancing, not speaking to a single human being all day long. And on this platform, they were able to. And can you believe that we had up to 750 calls per night during the pandemic? We could only put on 20, 30 calls, of course, over the course of a night. But we had up to 750 a night. 500 was regular, and we never got under 300 calls for a single night during the pandemic. That's a true story there. So, us. So we've provided the platform together. Together we've provided the platform, and we've created the platform together. So I would feel uncomfortable about taking the credit. In fact, my colleagues tonight will say, "Oi, Dotton, all you do is, you know, do what we tell you to do." So we should be getting the credit. It should be called Paul and Solmaz and Alex's debating diverse basement. That's what they would say. If I try to get away with Dotton's diverse.
Yeah, or a caller could suggest, you know, a better one.
Yeah, they could. I'll tell you what, let's put that out there. If there's anybody who can think of a better name than the nightclub, holler. Let's see where we want to go with that. Otherwise, Joe, do you want to talk about any of the other subjects that we're talking about tonight?
No, I don't think so, but I'm enjoying, I'm very interested in everything you're talking about.
I'm really appreciative of your call. Thank you very much, because, of course, sometimes I genuinely just want a natter myself. I'm happy for you to call up and have a natter, whatever's on your mind sometimes.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. So, Joe, let's speak again then, anytime you like.
Oh, yeah.
Joe in Watford, thank you very much. We've got Denise in Anglesey. Then we'll speak to Harry in Plymouth. Hello, Denise. How are you?
I'm all right. I've recovered and bounced back. I was on my hands and knees cleaning my bathroom soap today, so scrubbing it out. So I'm obviously well.
And I've got to say, because you did drop me an email, and I forgot to mention it, to Linda in Hexham, who is coming up your way, and you said, if Linda in Hexham wants to come up your way, and you are happy to receive her, and you're happy
for us to
at least put her into communication with you.
Yes, that would be lovely. That would be lovely.
So
lovely person.
So the party's round yours, yeah? Do we have to bring a bottle? Do we have to bring a bottle, or...?
Oh, no. I keep drinking, even though I don't drink for visitors and if anybody does the odd job.
Hang on a second. Do you know how many of us there are in this nightclub?
Are you all coming?
Yeah, we're all coming. And it's like, what, you just thought... You thought it was only Linda in Hexham? We're all coming, and there's a million and a half of us.
Seating,
1.5 million of us. You've told us not to bother bringing a bottle, so it's going to cost you a bob or two.
Doesn't matter. You're all very precious at Five Live, and I was telling Paul, I'm very, very proud to be one of the nightclub members.
You know, if I was you, I would just give everybody a glass of tap water. If I was you.
Those that are driving will be on water, but I have sparkling water.
I'm not driving then. I'll walk. I'll get there if I can somehow otherwise. So we're all going off to Anglesey. I hope we don't sort of imbalance the island, you know, because if we all come to Anglesey, a million and a half of us, and that's how many people listen to Five Live overnight, what can I say? A million and a half of us come over there, and we all jump up at the same time, and you know what happens with gravity? Maybe we'll tilt the island, so we've got to be careful of that, don't we?
Yeah, it's a Newton theory.
Yeah, I'm just making sure that health and safety is in place. But what did you want to talk about?
First of all, the mother and daughter, it's amazing. They're both amazing.
Karen and Carlisle, that I was speaking to a few moments ago. Yeah, indeed,
It puts things into perspective.
Yeah, yeah. What things, do you mind me asking, that it put into perspective?
For instance, me groaning about lymphedema and general infections. And that lady and her daughter, amazing,
But, you know, everybody... There's a saying that I've used so many times on the nightclub. Who feels it knows it. When you're going through your particular health challenge, that dominates your thoughts and your landscape and everything else. It's not competition to see whose health challenge is more acute and whether everybody else should just shut up and not complain because somebody else has a more acute challenge. It's just, it's the diversity that Joe was just talking about. Of not just this program, but of life itself, suggests that some people will have more acute ones and other people have it. But I can assure you, when I've got a kidney stone, as much as I would like to say, "Oh, just behave yourself, Dotton," crying like a baby over a
kidney stone when, you know, Denise in Anglesey is feeling her health condition much more than you. I'm like, I'm sorry, Denise in Anglesey. This is my home. I'm feeling this. I'm going to cry like a baby. It's my kidney stone, so I'll cry if I want to. Cry if I want to, you know?
Well, your ureters are that tiny that to pass a stone, it is painful, I believe, yeah.
Yeah, you know, like, gentlemen never like to talk about their ureters.
Sorry, Dot, I'm not landing myself in it. Your ureters.
So this is the jeopardy of this nightclub. You never know what is going to come up in conversation.
But
you've got to continue it because we're all friends. We can, you know, handle the good and the bad and we can make it positive somehow or other. So, but your mum had cosmetic surgery.
She did. She went into the knife. She had a nose job done. And she had it done three times, something, because it left scar tissue and she couldn't breathe very well through her nose. So she had it done three times. There was nothing wrong with her nose. I mean, the one she had was okay, but have you ever seen a movie, Death Becomes That, with Goldie Hawn and I think it was Meryl Streep?
I haven't seen lots of surgery. I haven't seen it, but I love both actors. I think they're both amazing actors, but I haven't seen it. I wish I had. Why?
Yeah.
Why? Is that what your mum's nose looked like?
In the end, their bodies more or less, they walk down the steps at the end of the movie, and their bodies, because they've had so much work done on them, their bodies, well, they just collapse down these steps outside the building.
Okay. Mm-mm. Yeah. What, is that your mum... didn't have that much work done, though.
No, the movie. As I said, she had a nose done.
Why did she have it done in the first place?
Heaven knows. I don't know, because she's a pretty woman anyway.
Yeah, you said there's nothing wrong with
her. My mum in America, and she had the surgery in America.
Yeah.
And she also had a facelift twice.
Yeah,
you've got to keep it up, though. Why do it?
Of course, once you do it,
you've got to keep it up.
Of course you do.
And your permanent eyeliner put on foot when you went to bed. She's got an eyeliner on. Yeah, that's
why I've only known one surgeon, a cosmetic surgeon, and he used to drive around in a Porsche, is all I can say. But is there pressure, though? I mean, your mum lives in America where... Believe me,
it's commonplace. Yeah.
One of the things I remember American women saying when they realised I was from Europe, as they call it, and say, "Yeah, the women in Europe they don't get their teeth done because you know in America you get your teeth done is a really important thing if you're a woman, not least, and they don't shave under their armpits. You know, they'd be."
Well, he
shaves under their armpits, apart from Yanks. And, you know, they would sort of, like, talk about it as if, how dare they not shave under their armpits? Like, it was some kind of social crime not to... And I wonder if there is a certain amount of pressure, not least on women, and not least on women in the United States, but possibly here as well, to go and get a even prettier nose than the one you've got before, and that obviously is in the eye of the beholder. Was there any pressure, do you think, on your mum?
I don't know, because she had it done over there. She was very bruised, apparently, and then she wouldn't fly over until the bruising had gone to see me. I think my sister-in-law as well, you know, Derek, who I met a few weeks ago that came over, my sister-in-law came over as well with him, the family. And she's had work done as well. These are the ones that live in Rhode Island. She'd have a tummy tuck because she didn't like her tummy. I mean, I've got a big belly, but I'd rather put up with that, I think. And I've got two teeth missing at the front.
Yeah. Well, you decide if you want to have a cosmetic surgery, not anybody else, but... Yeah, you look fine to me from here. I mean, it's just down the phone line, obviously. But nevertheless, you look fine to me. You know what I mean? It's in the eye of the beholder, and I do not behold you. So I'm happy for you to look anything like... I'm sure that smile's amazing with the missing two front teeth. Chaucer didn't have a problem with the wife of Bath having that big gap in her teeth, did he? So why should I have a problem with it? Thank you, Denise. Thank you very much. But you see what I mean? Does everybody see what I mean about the pressures in society? It's almost as if, you know, you're the odd one out that hasn't had any cosmetic surgery, particularly when you see, you know, Yangs, they've had this, they've had that. I know it's an exaggeration. Not every American person has, but it does seem as if there's some pressure in society over there, if not over here. We've got Harry with us in Plymouth, though. Hello, Harry.
Good morning, Dotton. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you very much. How are you?
Yeah, I'm really well, thank you.
Yeah, good to have you on the phone. Flipping up, have you not been at the Labour Party conference this week?
I've not been at the conference. I've been watching it closely from home, so it's been really interesting to follow.
Yeah, because you'll be there soon. And you're off to Oxford, what, in the next day or two? Or are you there already?
Oh, it's just over a week away, so we've got Freshers Week from the 7th of October.
Just so that I remind everybody, Harry has been calling this programme since he was about 16, 15 or 16. He had to have permission from his mum to call the programme. He stuck with us all of these years. I knew from the first time he called that he would end up in Oxford University. And I did also predict that he'll end up being the Prime Minister of this country. So what he's got to say... Well, I did predict that, didn't I? Did I not say that at the time?
Well, Dotton... I screen recorded the first time I spoke to you. I listened back and you did predict it.
Exactly, you see. And well done you for getting into Oxford. I'm so extremely proud of you. You can't imagine. I tell people, yeah, you've got Harry in Plymouth, you know. He's talked to us since he was a kid. He's managed to get into Oxford. And then when you walk into Downing Street, I'll say, well, I taught him everything he knew, that bloke. Tell me, first of all, though, because you join us for our first-time voters panel as well, because you were a first-time voter at the last general election. The government, you're saying, is in a difficult position now with regards to what?
Well, are we talking about the pandemic or now?
We're talking about the pandemic, but what's the difficult position? The question from, or at least the question that Chris Whitty posed to himself, it has to be said, but arguably to the government as well, not this government, maybe the government during the pandemic, was did we understate the impact of COVID or did we overstate it? And it's a question that troubles him, or whether they got it right. What would you say?
Well, I think the government were in a really difficult position during the pandemic because there were so many uncertainties. We didn't know, for example, about how quickly the virus could be transmitted, and things like long COVID were still only just learning about. But from my standpoint, I was living in a clinically extremely vulnerable household during the pandemic. And from my perspective, it just felt like we weren't acting fast enough to deal with the threat of the virus. I mean, I remember watching on the TV in March 2020, seeing so many gatherings across the UK, whilst many countries were implementing some really stringent measures. I mean, I was listening to Matt Hancock at the COVID inquiry, and he said that had we locked down just a few weeks earlier, tens of thousands of lives could have been saved. So I think for me, it just felt like the government didn't act fast enough. And then later in the pandemic, we saw them kind of repeat that mistake where they seemed to just lock down too late.
Well, there was the not acting fast enough a result of the government's inefficiency, or was it a philosophical response to what was happening in Italy, for example? I remember Italy was the first European country that imposed a kind of a regional lockdown, and then Spain followed, and we were looking at it from a distance. I was covering all those stories every single night, and we were still thinking, oh, it's happening over there, not over here. I wonder whether the time that the government took to lock down much more quick or much more thoroughly was because of a philosophical thinking that this pandemic isn't really that bad, or whether it was just because we didn't have our house in order to be able to react much quicker.
Well, it was a completely unprecedented situation. I mean, no government would have made all of the decisions correct. It was a hugely difficult situation back then. I remember watching the TV in almost disbelief, but it just seemed to me like the government weren't really taking it as seriously as they should have been. I mean, at the start of the pandemic, we heard allegations that the government were even following a strategy of herd immunity. And I think that was really the wrong approach. And I think MPs, for example, they looked back and they said that the initial handling of the pandemic was one of our worst public health failures in history. So I think it just seemed to me as if the response to the virus wasn't coordinated properly. It just felt like we weren't taking it seriously from the outset. I mean, we had Matt Hancock in Parliament saying we had an adequate stock of PPE. Then we saw nurses going into ICU wards not being properly equipped.
Indeed. Although the tone has to be right, because the government, like you said, unprecedented situation. But whatever the situation the government faces on a day-to-day basis, they have to get the tone right. Otherwise, it can result in people being unnecessarily panicked. Yeah, it can result in people not taking the right precaution if they're understating the situation. So quite apart from whether, we had enough stock of PPE or whatever it might be, it's the tone. And I don't know what you remember about that tone. Was it a tone of, if we don't do this, you are going to die? Which might be an exaggeration. For a lot of people, not for everybody, but, or was it a tone of, look, don't panic, carry on as usual, but we'll manage this somehow? Or was there something in between those two positions that was the right tone at the time? It seems from what you're saying, the tone that the government should have taken, if they weren't taking it seriously enough, was they should have taken the tone of, you better do this, otherwise you are going to die.
Well, I think tone is really important. What our leaders say, it does matter. And I think that many times at the start of the pandemic, it just felt like the messaging was far too inconsistent. I mean, we heard Boris Johnson at the podium talk about still shaking hands all of the time. And then we heard the government advice, for example, change on that. So it just felt very inconsistent. It didn't seem like there was a clear message from the start. And then I think that was ultimately borne out in the policy which the government implemented. Because ultimately, if we had lockdown sooner, we would have been able to flatten the curve earlier and then have ensured that the impacts weren't as damaging.
Yeah, I can hear that. Harry, I'm going to leave it for now, but make sure you join us again. Good luck. I'm keeping my fingers crossed for you at Oxford. Double first would be nice. But hey, whatever you come down with, we're proud of you nevertheless. Harry in Plymouth there, 08085 909693. And no doubt we'll hear more from Harry in Plymouth when we have our next first-time voters panel as well. But what we're talking about tonight, like he was responding to, Harry was responding to right then, was whether the government got the tone right for the pandemic or whether they understated its seriousness or overstated it. Your thoughts, please, on reflection. 08085 909693. The time now is 3:32.
The voice of the UK
and the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
BBC News on 5 Live. Sir Keir Starmer has added his voice to international calls for Israel and the Lebanese militant group Hezbollah to agree a ceasefire. In his first address as Prime Minister to the UN General Assembly, Sir Keir said it was vital for both sides to step back from the brink. The Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu addresses the Assembly later today, but has already rejected a proposal for a truce from France and the US. President Zelensky has outlined his plans for victory against Russia in a meeting with Joe Biden at the White House. Mr. Biden said Russia wouldn't prevail and pledged more military aid. The Ukrainian leader then met the US Vice President and Democrat presidential nominee Kamala Harris. And the Treasury is reconsidering Labour's manifesto plan to further tighten rules on non-dom tax status, which was scrapped by the last Conservative government. BBC News understands that there are concerns about how much money would be raised if wealthy foreigners left the UK. And Hurricane Helene has been upgraded to Category 4. It's gathering pace off the Gulf of Mexico, heading for Florida. 5 Live Sport now. Here's Matty Nixon.
In football, 10-man Tottenham beat the Azerbaijani side Karabakh 3-0 in their opening game of this season's Europa League. Spurs had defender Radu Dragosin sent off in the opening 10 minutes, but goals from Brennan Johnson, Pap Matis Sarr and Dominic Solanke were enough for victory. Elsewhere, Rangers were 2-0 winners at Malmö in their league stage opener in Sweden. Nedim Bajrami and Ross McCausland got the goals for Philippe Clement's side. Celtic are the first Scottish side to qualify for the Women's Champions League group stages since it was introduced in the 2020-21 season. A 2-0 win on the night and a 3-0 aggregate victory over the Ukrainian side Vorskla Poltava was enough for Celtic to go through. Manchester City and Arsenal also progressed to the group stage. The Gunners overturned a 1-0 first leg deficit to beat the Swedish side Häcken 4-1 on aggregate, while City picked up a 3-0 victory against Paris FC to win the tie 8-0 over two legs. In cricket, the pace bowler Josh Hull has been ruled out of England's tour of Pakistan next month with a quad injury. England have opted not to call up a replacement. England's white ball side face Australia in the fourth one-day international at Lord's later on Friday. And the RB Formula One team has confirmed that they're dropping Australian driver Daniel Ricciardo for the final six races of the season. He'll be replaced by the New Zealander Liam Lawson. Ricciardo's future had been in doubt for much of the season, and if this is to be his exit from F1, he bows out with 8 Grand Prix wins and having made the podium 32 times.
You've probably got a list of things your child needs for uni. Pans, cutlery, sheets, duvet, towels, you know. But this is a little reminder that they'll also need a TV licence to be covered to watch all the TV channels, live TV on streaming services and BBC iPlayer. On the downside, it's one more thing on your list. On the upside, you can continue to enjoy your favourite shows together on the family group chat. And they won't be bringing it home to be washed either. To find out more, search TV licence uni.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
The voice of the UK.
This is our wee part of the United Kingdom.
Live from here at Old Trafford.
I think it needs a massive overhaul.
Dalton Adebayo. Listen on BBC Science.
Yeah, 0808 590 9693 is the number to call if you'd like to join the nightclub tonight about any of the topics we're talking about. The voice of wisdom, as I call him, Lenny in Ashford, has emailed me saying, Dawson, a debate that's very important to expose the truth. I have debated this many times, criticising the government. Thank you very much. You're talking about the COVID conversation, which has been inspired by the, or prompted, I think prompted is a better word, by the Chief Medical Officer, Professor Chris Whitty, who is, you know, conflicted as to whether they did the right thing or they expressed the severity of COVID in the balanced way, the right way, the right tone. And he doesn't, he's not sure whether they underplayed its seriousness or overplayed it. And of course, we have a sense, don't we? There were many people who, for example, when lockdown was imposed, asked, is this really necessary? Is it really necessary to shut down the entire country? That would be a response to what they would consider to be the government overplaying the severity of COVID. But hey, remember, a lot of people lost their lives as a result of the government telling us about the severity of this. So to talk about a quarter of a million people losing their lives, can you talk about it as being overplayed? Then the other perspective is, oh, we lost a quarter of a million people because the government underplayed it. They should have said, oh, no, 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 it's much more serious than we are putting across. So they're underplaying it, and the consequence of that, maybe one could extrapolate, could be that we lost more lives than were necessary. So I'm asking you to look back and reflect on that, and you tell me, as you remember it, did the government for you in the early days of the pandemic, did they underplay its seriousness, its severity, or did they overplay? And whichever way you come down on, you know, we have to see what the consequences of that was And I'd like your thoughts, though, your thoughts and your memories of that period at the very beginning of the pandemic. Did you think the government was overplaying it or underplaying it? 08085909693. That's one of the subjects we're talking about tonight. Oh, and there are several people who have continued to give their support to Karen, who told us about her daughter, the challenges of her daughter, who had three faces, as she put it, growing up, because she had so much reconstructive surgery as a child that literally had three different faces when she was growing up. And Karen has told, as a proud mum, about her daughter, and despite her own challenges, is very, very positive. Now, I'm asking you generally about cosmetic surgery. We've seen, well, we've heard about a tragedy over the last few days of a mum of five who was undergoing a procedure, non-surgical procedure, and sadly lost her life as a result of that. That's what prompted tonight's conversation about cosmetic surgery in general, if you've had it, and or you know somebody who has, and if you could try and navigate us through the procedure, why you had it. Was it for surgical reasons or otherwise? 08085909693. And indeed, what was the procedure? Do tell me. I'd love to hear from you as well. Oh, and this one, this is from Julia, who says, amazing story that Karen and her daughter and what they went through, so much pain and trauma, that she now faces uncertainty through her own health. And that's Karen, yeah. She's got her own health issues as well, but she's still a very strong and proud mum. And thank you, like I say, for all of the kind words towards her, indeed. And Tony says, if you don't think COVID was severe, just watch a healthy-looking man in his 30s decline and die in the period of just over a week. It sounds like it's an experience that you have gone through yourself, Tony. Thank you for adding that to the conversation. So let's talk. And also, if you've got an item of clothing that you can't part with, call me 08085909693. Levi's 501 seem to be the popular one, for men at least, in any case. You can never part with them. Once worn, never, well, yeah, you wash them, but you don't throw them away, however threadbare they might be. And literally, mine are threadbare. In places you wouldn't think a pair of jeans would be threadbare. In fact, there's more thread on my jeans than there is denim. Yeah, more thread than denim. Paul is in York, though. Hello, Paul. How are you?
Hiya, John. Full of cold, mate. Got an absolute belter.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. You are taking your mind back to the pandemic, are you?
Yeah.
What do you remember about the tone of the way that the government told us about it? Do you think that they overplayed it? Did they oversell it or undersell it, do you think, in terms of how devastating it could be?
Well, to be honest with you, when it first emerged and started coming on our screens and the things that were happening over in China, I don't think we as people, and I certainly didn't take it as serious. It was like being stuck in the middle of a bad, cheap B movie or something, and it just didn't seem real. But then as things progressed, I think we did too little too late. I mean, I didn't take it for real to start with. I thought, oh, it won't come here, it won't come here. But then we got the first two cases in the UK, in York. And when the ambulance came to get them from the Stay City Hotel in York, when they got out of the ambulance, we were parked nearby and we watched them doing full hazmat suits and everything. That, the two people were taken away to Newcastle somewhere. We never heard anything else about them. But what happened from that point on was, as soon as they came, they had them two cases, we should have taken drastic measures. This was at the beginning of January in 2020. We didn't go into lockdown till March. Was it 20th of March?
Yeah, towards the end of March. Do you think, though, your attitude at the very beginning, when you said that you didn't take it seriously, was that, would you put that on the government? Would you say, well, for example, that the government's attitude influenced...
They knew, Tom. They knew that this virus had been about from late June, early July time.
Of the previous year, 2019.
If you remember, around November time, early December time of 2019, a lot of people got very sick, and our hospital wards filled up pretty damn quick. Mm-hmm. One of them was a friend of mine. I later lost my dad to COVID, but not till 2021, August in 2021. But, I mean, there was just, it was like, they didn't want to admit there was a problem there, and I don't think they actually knew what to do with the problem. I mean, one minute they were telling us that face masks didn't protect us from anything, and then 3 months later, in the thick of it, you must wear a face mask. You know? And then threw the NHS under a bus, completely under a bus.
If the government had been stronger, if they'd said from day one, look, this is coming, no ifs and no buts, you're going to get locked down, we're going to shut down the borders, you better take it seriously, would you have taken it more seriously if they had come with that tone and attitude?
Right, yeah, I could say I would have done. I mean, I never took it serious. I did take it serious when I saw the things happening, but there were so many conflicts as well. I mean, if it was so deadly, and which it turned out it was, and Boris had it, why did he carry on with the parties after he'd nearly lost his life to it? How was he so stupid?
Yeah, those are questions that the mind boggles even considering, to be honest. It is, but maybe, and you've brought a point that I wasn't even thinking about, Paul. Maybe, just maybe, those events that we were shocked by, the, if you like, the casualness with which COVID was seemingly being observed in Downing Street, that's got to, hasn't it, affect the way that we respond to it. Do you know what I mean? If you're casual about it, think, oh, it's okay. I've been to see friends of mine who've been terminally ill, and some of them would make you think, oh, look, listen, this is just the way it is. I've been unlucky. And, you know, you try and be sort of more positive. And I've had other friends who have been much more, you know, one friend said to me when I was going to visit him literally in very serious circumstances with cancer, he said to me, because I was trying to be inspirational or positive, he said, don't you realize I'm going to die? And that was when it really shook me that this wasn't a conversation that I should, or that he was taking lightly. And that really affected me. You know, if people are strong like that, if they behave in a way that shows you that, look, this is a life and death situation, you take it seriously. And I wonder if that's not part of the problem. The fact that you think, well, they're having parties, it can't be that bad. You know what I mean? But thank you, Paul. Really appreciate your contribution to tonight's programme. Let's do it again soon. We've got Gina in Forest Hill in southeast London. Oh, is it?
Yes,
oh, apologies.
Yes, Dutton, greetings. You've spoken to me before. You can get it if you really want, but you must try.
You can try and try. And is it Gina?
Gina, because when I spoke to you in the year, you were saying to me you have a poetry thing, which I need to get in touch with you separately because I've got hundreds of poems. I think you said you had a poetry something.
No,
publishing
no,
things.
I published books, novels, not poetry. Really,
no, this is not a novel. This is just me just going to be exploring how to do it.
Well,
but yeah, no. Even this evening, whilst I was listening to you, I started to do a poem about what you were saying, how from up all night, how this thing has sort of, as it's developed, you know.
Yes,
the all-night show.
Yes.
I was even making some notes of a little poem. So even though you don't do it, you never know, I might persuade you one time. But
well, yeah.
I've got a few.
Do you want to read out, or are you able to read out what you've written tonight with the...
No, because not right now, because I'm on my phone and I've done it on the thing, on my
I'm
text.
Intrigued.
But I'm phoning up because of the COVID stuff.
Okay.
Because of the COVID. Because you'd mentioned about the COVID, and I used to be a safety manager. So.
Yeah, and what was your experience of it? What do you remember about that time and the government's attitude towards it in particular? What do you remember?
Yes. I mean, it's very, very emotional for me to listen to it, because I've gone from being a corporate professional safety person to now I do drumming and poetry, probably because of the trauma I went through, which I didn't realise. But I think going through it at the time, it was just so demanding. It was just, just lots and lots of risk assessments, all the different government guidance, sometimes the different changes. But at the very beginning, it was very tough for myself because, I mean, I was in a small safety team, which already had, I suppose, due to the cuts, you know, 3 staff down. So there was only like 2 of us. And literally, I would go to Costco and buy... like plastic gloves and stuff like that.
Because I hadn't understood
about this pandemic, you know. So at the very beginning, people were asking me for advice. I would check maybe with public health. They'll say, no, you don't need the PPE at that moment. But
it's
to
funny.
Me, I think they just...
It's,
sorry.
No, don't apologise. It's about your conversation, but I was just going to add on to what you said about going to Costco to buy plastic gloves. It wasn't until, and this is an absolutely true story, because I was working overnight, I used to go to the, one particular supermarket. It was the Tesco, it was around our way, at 5 o'clock in the morning, because it was open 24 hours, you know? And then one day I was there at 5 o'clock or 5:30 in the morning after the program. I was there at 5:30 in the morning and literally they had put out a whole batch, new batch of toilet paper and literally everybody was around it. And I thought, hang on, maybe I should just grab one. Maybe I should just take one because everybody seems to know something. Well, everybody seems to know something that I didn't know.
No, that's a good point. You know, that's a good point. And even as I said, I was a safety manager doing all these risk assessments, getting risk assessments across maybe, 30 sections of a department, etc. But you're right. One of the things you've just reminded me of this was when I actually had to now go to the shops myself. And when I looked around, I remember coming home and then saying to my daughter and other, they don't live with me, but, on the phone, I thought, this thing is real because there's nothing in the shops.
Yeah, and that's for
all the
loo
roll was gone. Everything was empty, and I had only ever seen that in the past if I went to certain countries where, you might just have a little produce, but... To see empty shelves, you're right, actually. That's quite an important thing that I thought.
I think that's the moment when a lot of people realise it was serious. What do you think about the government's tone, though? Did they get it right? Should they have played it up more to get the message across to us before we ended up seeing the empty shelves and so on? Should they have impressed on it more?
It's a big question, particularly for me. As I said, I was there going and helping to do the risk assessment. So it's difficult to say, could they do more? Because I felt I was under strain, like hundreds of emails a day, queries for this to work from home. So to me, it was just, I wouldn't say panic, but obviously it was something new that I'd worked up until then, about 30 plus years.
Yeah, it is a delicate...
And sadly, after that, I actually lost my job after that, which, I'm quite smarting about the way what things had happened there. But that was just down to toxic workplace culture. But I'm saying is, in the midst of doing this work and everything being piled on me, I just felt that they literally were just doing things in a very cack-handed way because, for instance, there's a lot of information was being kept from myself. They were having gold, silver groups and not putting the relevant persons in the meeting. I'm a safety manager. Why wasn't I there? But because of the toxicity of the culture of that particular council, it was mainly all the men were meeting. It was just very difficult. So I don't think they did the correct... Well, we can see, look what happened to that Max Hancock, what he was up to. They're doing one thing and doing another.
Well, I think that's a very, very valid point. You know, he's supposed to be the health secretary. If he's happy to break social distancing rules, then... You know, you as rank and file ordinary people think, well, it can't be that bad, can it? If he's prepared. Janiyah, we're coming to the end of this conversation tonight. Thank you very much. Really appreciate your contribution to it. We've got the wife of Bath with us, Carol. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Yeah, I'm good. Thank you.
I was hoping you'd call. That's why I was talking about the gap teeth earlier on, because I was hoping that it would resonate with
you. Oh, were
you?
Yeah, oh, that's nice to know.
I mentioned Chaucer's wife of Bath and her infamous gap teeth, and the fact that I didn't mention the fact that she had outlived her seven husbands. I didn't mention that. There was no need for that tonight, but there was.
I've got a gap between my two top
teeth. I was hoping it would resonate with you. There are all sorts of ways that conversations resonate. When people say, "All right," there was, you know, if somebody said, right, there was an Irishman, a Welshman and a Nigerian, I immediately prick up my ears and think, oh no, that Nigerian's going to get, he's going to get stuffed from this joke, you know. So apart from the gap teeth, you want to talk about lockdown?
Well, we're talking about lockdown.
Yeah.
I just remember during the number of flights that were coming in from Europe.
Yeah, yeah.
And we were all locked down, but there were all these people coming in from Europe.
It's mad.
That's just a thing that sticks in my head about the so-called lockdown.
What sticks in
my head?
Where
they didn't manage flights.
Yeah, what sticks in my head was that Italy was under lockdown, but flights were still coming in from Italy.
Yeah,
I know. You know what I
mean? Yeah, thousands of people coming in. And we were all in a lockdown, and I just didn't get it.
Did it give you a sense of the pandemic not maybe being as serious as, you know, the government was trying to get across to us about the seriousness? But if you, like you're saying, that flights are coming in, bringing COVID with them, potentially, did it give you a sense of it not being as serious? Were you less likely to take it seriously as a result of that?
Well, no, I didn't think, was it as serious? It was just like, what? You know, what? What's going on?
But that's got to
affect
you.
I was sort of working anyway in a convenience store at the time.
Frontline worker.
But then and just having to do all this stuff that you had to do. And then there were all these flights coming in.
Yeah.
From
yeah.
Europe.
Yeah.
Which is like the gateway from everywhere. And we didn't know who was on the flights.
Yeah. But that's the point I'm making, though, Carol.
It was just like mad. But I didn't understand it.
I get that. But it's exactly the point I'm trying to make. If the government had locked it down and shut down all the flights, right, nobody's coming to this country. No.
Well, lockdown is lockdown.
Yeah, exactly. But if they had been more affirmative with their lockdown and said, nobody is coming into this country, nobody, we can't afford a single person coming to this country, would you have taken it more seriously?
Well, I don't know, because it didn't happen.
Yeah, yeah.
I know that I took my life seriously.
Sure.
And just got on with and did what I had to do. And wore my mask and washed my hands and used sanitizer and
washed your hands for 20 seconds? For the full 20 seconds?
Well, no, I just used the hand sanitizer stuff and I bought some high power, you know, 97% alcohol. to wash my hands.
Oh, right, not to get yourself blotted. What do they call it? Blathered.
Did that regularly.
You know what? I wouldn't recommend this at all, but, you know, when I finally realised that, oh, my goodness, this is very serious, I did go and buy a bottle of rum. I won't lie. I don't drink. You know, I don't generally drink, but I thought I better have a bottle of rum because I might need it over the next few months. But that's when it built up. I think over the course of the pandemic, it the seriousness of it built up more and more and more and more until you started seeing ministers maybe break COVID. Although I observed all the rules all the way through, but hey.
Well, when they were all, you know, when the rules were broken and all that kind of thing, we saw that picture in the paper.
Don't take it seriously anymore,
didn't
do
we?
You?
Of Matt Hancock,
yeah,
and all that. I just thought, oh, just get on with it, do what you got to do,
yeah,
and all that, and then you all these stories come out, and it's the reason we're talking about COVID lockdowns and all that. Is it because of the COVID inquiry?
It is, because the chief medical officer, Professor Chris Whitty, is himself. Just wants to make sure he's conflicted as to whether they gave the right tone, whether they delivered the message of COVID and its seriousness.
Conflicted.
Yeah, well, he's conflicted as to whether they overplayed the seriousness of COVID.
No,
or
they didn't overplay
it.
The seriousness. Okay. Definitely didn't overplay.
Well, he'll be pleased to hear that, but obviously if they got the balance right, he'd be even more pleased. Carol, for now, thank you very much. Thanks to everybody who's contributed to tonight's conversation. We've got another hour of the programme to go. We'll get into it, don't worry.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This. BBC News at 4 o'clock. This is Justine Green. Israel is coming under increased diplomatic pressure to reach a ceasefire with Hezbollah. Sir Keir Starmer used his first speech at a UN General Assembly to call for an end to the fighting in Lebanon. Addressing the gathering in New York, the Prime Minister warned of a wider war if hostilities were allowed to continue.
I call on Israel and Hezbollah, stop the violence. Step back from the brink. We need to see an immediate ceasefire to provide space for a diplomatic settlement, because further escalation serves no one. It offers nothing but more suffering for innocent people on all sides.
President Zelensky has outlined his plans for victory against Russia in a meeting with Joe Biden at the White House. Mr. Biden said Russia wouldn't prevail and pledged more military aid. The Ukrainian leader then met the US vice president and Democratic presidential nominee Kamala Harris, who insisted it was vital to stand up to the Russian leader. The Treasury is reconsidering Labour's manifesto plan to further tighten rules on non-dom tax status, which was scrapped by the last Conservative government. BBC News understands there are concerns about how much money would be raised if wealthy foreigners left the UK. More than 350,000 homes and businesses in Florida are without power as Hurricane Helene bears down on low-lying coastal areas. Officials have warned of a potentially catastrophic storm surge when the Category 4 storm makes landfall in the coming hours. Winds of around 125 miles an hour have been recorded. Speaking at the White House, the head of the Federal Emergency Agency, Deanne Criswell, said major disruption was expected.
We expect widespread power outages from this. When we think about Tallahassee, it's got a lot of tree canopy. So those trees are going to come down and impact those power lines, and the debris and the ability to detangle the debris from the power lines is what could take a long time.
A study has found the number of gambling adverts such as pitch side hoardings and shirt logos during the opening weekend of this season's Premier League had almost trebled compared with last year. England's most capped male footballer and former gambling addict Peter Shilton says the gambling industry is out of control.